You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we say, okay, Google, what is the midside? If you enjoy your trip into the midside here today, please tell a friend. Or other ways of giving us a tip are liking us on Facebook, following us on any of the social media, giving us 5 stars on iTunes and writing a nice little review there. We've got a bunch of nice reviews. We thank the people who've already done that. Or you can always support us on Patreon, where you pay per episode. So if we don't release content, you don't pay. If we do release content, you do pay. And we do release Patreon exclusive episodes, and we will have one on the movie Lucy coming soon. Over this past week, the social justice crowd has gone a little crazy. Last night of us recording this episode, so we're recording this episode on Sunday, and then on Saturday night, there was an event in Berkeley between the pro-Trump crowd and the Antifa crowd. And also on Survivor this past week, there was a whole transgender controversy about someone outing one of the transgender contestants. I will be writing about the Survivor thing this coming week because I've watched Survivor since I was 18. So this sort of had a huge emotional impact on me and the way people treated this and the way the fans and everyone treated this. So look for that. Joining me this trip from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards. Daniel, as far as the former story, do you know anything about what happened in Berkeley?
You think the guy who does news knows something about the news? It's ridiculous.
That's what I'm hoping for.
Ridiculous. No, I. It's too soon. All we have right now are competing news outlets trying to spin it for their guy, and I don't know what is going on yet. So I think what we're going to do here at the Midside is look into this story, see if there's some farce to be witnessed. There probably is, but we're going to check into it and decide if we want to report on it in the future. So,
well, a little bit of farce so far is the picture going around of the pro-Trump people handing the Antifa people Pepsis, which is absolutely hilarious. Like, that is something that I wish, that is a mid-side thing, and I wish we had come up with that.
It's really funny. By the way, people kept saying Antifa or Antifa, and my brain doesn't quite work the way that other people's brain does, so I had no idea what the fuck. I thought it was some Spanish socialist group.
And did you think it was a new female rapper, Queen Antifa?
Something like that. I had no idea. I knew I wasn't hip enough to know what it was, so I had to look it up. And of course, my source for all information is the Urban Dictionary. And I thought I would read quickly the top definition, labeled top definition of Antifa on Urban Dictionary, which is short for militant anti-fascists, middle-class champagne socialist, communist, anarchist white boys who don't like nationalists or fascists. They consider themselves to be rebelling against the establishment whilst upholding all of its ultra-politically correct views. Antifa only dislike racism when it's carried out by whites and do not have the bottle to stand up against anti-white racism. Don't know what that is. I.e. have the bottle. I don't know what that means. Leading to many people on the right to refer to them as traitors, I just call them morons. Most are teenagers and university students who grow out of the fad when they start paying taxes. And you know how the definitions have a sentence, like use this word in a sentence? The sentence is, Antifa is stupid. Thank you for
how
that
many
useful
people
definition. Upvoted? That's 4,784 upvotes.
And how many downvotes?
2,648.
Man, sometimes I like the internet a lot.
So, there you go. If anyone was uneducated about Antifa, like I was, go forth and be knowledgeable.
Also joining us this trip, from the Bay in the South, William Green. William, do you have any thoughts on Antifa or what happened in Berkeley?
I agree with Daniel. It's a little too early to tell. All I know right now is the one picture that stuck with me so far is a bunch of the free speech protesters, because there was a free speech rally there apparently as well, were dressed in what can only be described as football gear, like helmets and like padding and everything else ready to absorb the punches they were expecting from the Antifas. So I guess as long as the police continue to not do their job, it looks like kind of like when the Hell's Angels protected those folks during the funerals, the gays that had died, and all those crazy Westboro Baptist Church people were protesting, and the Hell's Angels would come and actually protect them. I feel like there's a little sliver of hope might be coming out of this story in the future.
Yeah, and there's any number of parallels we can make to, references we can make to any sort of movies, right? Mad Max, The Warriors. It's just that image almost seems out of a movie, doesn't it? These people wearing football gear like that.
Yeah, totally does. So I'm interested to see. I'll be following it as well.
I heard the Browns are already ready to draft the tall one.
Can't be worse than what they have now.
Yeah.
And the story probably can't be worse than some of the stories we have this week. Not that they're not entertaining, but just some of the things that happened. So let's check in with them in the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad. These aren't harmless criminals. This isn't just a fad.
There are weeks when we choose the news, and there are weeks when the news chooses us.
Is it the Force?
Yes. We are one with the news, and the news is one with us. I am so fucking sick of the story that we are about to do that my eyes must be forcibly dragged across the website in order to read the words to you at this time. But we would be remiss. That's right. We would be remiss if we did not discuss the United Airlines fiasco. So here we go. In case you have been living in a cave in Afghanistan for the past 72 hours at least.
In case you're Tony Stark.
And did not get a Moab dropped on your head in the last week.
In case you're Tony Stark and we're building Iron Man over the past 72 hours.
That's right. In case you are Donald Trump vacationing in Mar-a-Lago. It is our duty to inform you that the United Airlines have gone past leggings gates and are now on to dragging a Chinese man off the plane and having police beat him in the face of the baton gate. Louisville resident Audra Bridges posted a video of an incident online last Sunday which shows three security officers speaking to an unidentified passenger, now identified, on United Express Flight 3411 out of Chicago Airport. The man, who we now know is Dr. David Dow, was asked to leave the plane after it was overbooked, and he refused. United then asked police officers to be involved, and after a bit of a brouhaha, they forcibly removed him from the seat. He squealed like a stuck pig, and now he's going to own the airlines in a giant lawsuit. So, before
Wasn't
we
he
get
not,
into...
identified later not as Chinese, though? He's not Chinese, right?
Vietnamese. Oh, this might be an old
He's
article.
He's Vietnamese, then. Yeah. Yep. He's, yep.
Correction, he is now Vietnamese. So before
what does
we,
the American media know? They all look the same.
That's right. Well, the early reports were like that that there were riots in China over this because it seemed like a racist thing. And
well,
I guess
and now
that
they
was
don't
fake
care.
News. Now, yeah, yeah right. Now, they're
now,
onto
they
the,
now they won't care. So. Right.
So before we get into analyzing the depth of this, I'll let you, Justin, give your general reaction to the story of the week.
What general reaction do you want? Like to what happened or to the fact that we shouldn't be fucking repeating this and we're only fucking repeating this because it's social media and we have time to fucking waste on fucking stupid cell phone videos? Like, would this have been a story before the internet, or would it just been like they dragged someone off? Like, has no one been dragged off a plane before? Is this the first time this has happened?
Unclear. Certainly people have been involuntarily removed from planes before, and in fact that's part of the whole narrative of this, is how often does this happen? And so Nate Silver,
right, and how often did it happen? How often did it happen before social media and before everyone, whenever anything happens, right? If someone like yells a little bit, everyone fucking whips out their camera phones. It's like a fucking orgy and everyone whips their camera phone dicks out when every little thing happens. It's like, oh, there's a tit. Everyone's dick's coming out. Like, it's ridiculous.
This sounds like a fantasy I might have had the other night.
So let's delve into some of this, the details of this story. I want to lay out a couple things to make very clear about what happened and what didn't happen. So first, there is the notion that the plane was, and we'll get into the moral evaluation and the yelling at the guy later. But the details here, like, it's been reported that the plane was overbooked. Technically not true.
Yes.
The plane was, every passenger on the plane had a seat. What happened was that United needed to get certain flight attendants to another flight so that this other flight wasn't delayed, and then thus more flights weren't delayed, etc. So they asked for passengers to voluntarily give up their seats. Two did, after being offered $800 plus a free flight. No one else did, so they randomly chose a guy, and it ended up being this psycho doctor.
Well, they chose the doctor and his wife.
There you go. He didn't do it, so he was forcibly dragged off. The other thing is that there's controversy over whether or not United had a legal right to remove him from the plane. Any of you heard anything about this?
No, because when I heard the story, I immediately thought that that angle would have been retarded. People are actually going to that angle.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's a thing.
The entirety of the legal debate, and I mean this sincerely because this is the only thing that has come up in the numerous legal articles I've read about this, is how you define boarding. So if you define boarding as the entire process of getting people onto the plane, and then when you close the door and the airline says the boarding process is now over, if that's your definition of boarding, then United had a legal right to remove them from the plane. But if you define boarding narrowly as the time when people are outside the plane and then they get on the plane, then they did not have a legal right to remove him from the plane. So this is going to go to court, and some fucking circuit judge is going to have to decide what the definition of boarding is.
Are we doing the legal angle now? Because I have a question if we're doing the legal angle.
Well, I found it curious that that's what it boils down to.
Right, so, that's 100% my question is, does it not fucking matter? Isn't it United's fucking plane? So if they invent a transporter and you're in midair and they go, we don't want you on the plane anymore, they can fucking transport you out of there with Scotty if they want. Can't they? Don't they have that legal right if they own the plane?
So that's a broader, legal philosophical question. I'll let William answer.
Well, I was thinking, you know, like, the whole idea, like where this comes from, as far as I know, and this is my complete layman like understanding, is, you know, like once you're at, like, take it to a boat, right? Once you're at sea, it's not like the captain can suddenly decide, eh, I don't want to transport you anymore, and just kind of like throw you into the ocean, right?
Why so can't they?
Because they've taken on a responsibility for you, right? A moral responsibility for you to get you to the other side.
So
right?
You can kill someone on the ship and they can't throw you overboard?
Okay, Justin.
I think. Well, hold on. That's where, like, maritime law and all this other stuff comes in that I'm a complete layman about, right? But there's this understanding of, like, hey, like, you know, at some point my life is in the captain's hands, right? And
yes.
I think that point is probably when the plane takes off, right? Like, up until that point, I'm with you, Justin. Like, if I own the plane and I decide I don't want to take you anymore, yeah, get the hell off, right? Like, I guess that's controversial and also strange to me because I think back, like, you know, like if someone came in to my house and I wanted them to leave, you know, they have to leave, right?
Even if you invited them.
If I have a place of business, yeah, even if I invited them. If I have a place of business and I decide I don't want to serve someone, they have to leave, right? Like this makes a lot of sense, right? Like we can have a discussion about whether it was the right thing to do or good for their customers. Like that's a whole separate thing. So I don't want anyone to turn this into, oh, well, you think what United did was right or they handled it correctly. Like that's not what I'm saying at all. But the fact that people are debating whether they had a right or whether it was immoral for them to ask someone to leave is weird. It's so weird to me. Like they get to decide who comes on the plane, right? Isn't that right?
Yes.
Well, I have a question for you, sure. William. Were you saying it's because you're a layman or you're a gayman?
Both.
A lay gayman.
Well, as a gayman, yeah. You should know this goes back to the Christian cake thing, where people are now seeing businesses as an obligation. You're obligated to make
things
for
people. Yeah, well, in a way, well, hold on, not an obligation, a duty. Because an obligation, it's like a contract can be. You can think of it kind of like as an obligation, right? Like I've given you something and you're obligated to fulfill your end of the contract, right? But if one party backs out, you try to make amends, right? And it's not like they're going to extract a flight out of United. That's not, you know, like that doesn't make any sense, right?
Right.
If they don't want to take this guy here, then they don't have to.
And not to belabor the legal point.
There's a consequence.
And not to belabor the legal point, but to clarify the legal point, that is exactly the question of the legal point, which is, did United violate their contract with this guy, or did this guy violate his contract with United? And that entirely depends on your definition of boarding. So that's
I thought United had all sorts of language when you bought the ticket about how they can kick you off at any time, but that's me.
Only during the boarding process. If the boarding process is complete, the ticket says they cannot remove you from the plane.
Yeah, and I guess if we're going to get all legalese, which I think there's other parts of the story we should explore, but just to like put a cap on that part, the plane isn't boarded until the door is closed. I've been on tons and tons of flights, and that's 100% true. Once that door's closed,
You saying this, we'll send this recording to the circuit judge who hears the case, and you will be the definitive voice in this case.
Well, this is just from my tons of frequent flyer miles back from when I worked for the government. People have to leave or get back on the plane, or like sometimes when you're doing a connecting flight, they let you get off the plane and come back on until everyone's in the seat and they close that door. And they file here's the manifest for the people that are on the flight. That's what boarded is.
Yeah.
The flight is then boarded.
Hey, I agree with you. I'm just saying these fucking lawyers and judges do crazy shit. That's all I'm saying.
Let's get into that a little bit. How many people are actually forcibly removed from airplanes every year? Because by the tenor of the story here, and we're all moving, by the way, all these points are moving toward judging this guy to be an asshole, at least in my opinion.
Yeah.
According to the tenor of the news stories all about this thing, this is the only time this has ever happened in the history of all airline flights. No one overbooks. Overbooking is evil, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Even though this wasn't an overbooking, but how many people are involuntarily removed from airplanes every year? So let's just look at United. Nate Silver at 538, bless his heart, put together some statistics on this. From October to December 2016... Is that true that this is only in a three-month time period? If that's true, this is an incredible number of people, by the way. But the point is, out of 22,400,000 enplaned passengers, 891 had to be removed involuntarily, i.e. via this lottery process. This is only United. So per 10,000 passengers, that's less than half a passenger has to be removed involuntarily.
Yeah, that's going to be really awkward for that other half of the passenger.
I was going to say all those midgets getting kicked off flights.
That's right. Now
every flight there's a midget, they get kicked off automatically.
Oh, poor Brad Williams.
Peter Dinklage can't go anywhere.
That's right. So where does United rank?
Well, no,
then?
What happens is Peter Dinklage and Brad Williams get on flights together. They just swap who's on whose shoulders.
They would have a big trench coat.
Yeah.
That's right. A hat on. Anyway, so the question is, where does United rank in this? Do they kick the most passengers off of any flight, the least? Well, it turns out they rank basically dead center of the top 12 airlines, with Hawaiian Airlines actually being the airline that boots the fewest passengers per 10,000, and that's 0.07, and ExpressJet, I don't even know what the fuck that is, booting 1.28 passengers per 10,000. But airlines that are worse than United at booting passengers include Frontier, American, Southwest, SkyWest, JetBlue, and the aforementioned ExpressJet. Does this change anyone's mind about anything before we move on to judging this asshole?
I already knew that. Like, I didn't know the statistics, but I knew, like, logically that has to occur. So...
Okay, so good. We're going to move on then.
Yeah.
Here is the thing. Yes, let's talk about if was a bad move on United's part in terms of how they handled it. Probably. They probably should have offered more money, although they did offer, Justin, was it 800?
You're going to want to offer more money than $800?
Well,
I mean, then it becomes a fucking no.
In retrospect, since it cost them about a billion dollars in market share.
Okay. Well, so then I'm gonna fucking get up on the plane when they start offering money, and I'm gonna yell at everybody. I'm gonna go, do not fucking take the offer, and it just becomes an auction. It becomes an auction.
Haven't the airlines lobbied though for a maximum? Isn't there a legal maximum too now? Or not now, but isn't there a legal maximum as well?
In other words, it's
not like they can just keep auctioning. I'm asserting it without a story to back it up, but I'm pretty sure I heard that there is a legal maximum they can offer for rebooking someone, and that was lobbied by the industry.
Interesting.
I'm going to Google that because I've never heard it, and I don't think there should be, because it's like whatever you want to do. If you want to be like, we'll give you free food on planes for life if you get off this flight right now. I mean, you could start bartering with them, right? Like call the captain over and be like, all right, dude, this is what I want. These are my demands.
We'll give you one sneaker signed by Shaquille O'Neal.
Right.
Exactly.
Shaq's on the back of the plane.
That's right.
Give me a picture with Gronk, who's sleeping in the front, and I will get off this plane.
Well, other airlines, for instance, like Delta, handles this in a blind auction way, where if they need people to get off, they basically say, type into your keypad, like, what you would take to get off the plane, and then they take the three or however many they need lowest bids. And I think in a blind auction sense, you're probably going to get people off the plane for a lot less than you would expect to do. But nonetheless, offered $800, whatever. Two people got off. No one else was interested. So they chose him. And here is the thing that I keep repeating in my head in the entire situation, which is, even if United is legally wrong, even if they're morally wrong, even if the police are legally and morally wrong, be a fucking adult and get off the plane. You are holding up I don't know how many more passengers, plus other flights, plus these flight attendants who are trying to get to a flight so that hundreds more people aren't delayed. Be a fucking adult and get off the plane. If you are wronged, if you are harmed in some sense, whether you lose business or you are psychologically distressed or whatever, your time for retribution is in the courtroom. It is not there fucking with everyone else's lives. Be a human being, be an adult, get your ass off the airplane.
But it's got to be way more fun to squeal like a stuffed pig and then get bashed by a bunch of police officers.
It's this thing.
I mean, if you're trying to maximize the amount of money out of the situation, I think you have to choose option B, Daniel. Like in all cynical honesty. I mean, why wouldn't I now, knowing that this is what will happen, not take exactly this guy's actions? If someone asks me to do something I don't want to do, and I see that there are people with cell phone cameras everywhere, and that the news is only going to pull the videos, which we'll get to in a second, from the actual police brutality, why wouldn't I do this? I mean, I got a few extra teeth. I mean, this guy's going to get probably, $1.5 million, right?
So attorney Mark Garagus, famous Hollywood attorney, does a podcast with Adam Kroll every Saturday that I listen to called Reasonable Doubt. And he estimated that a good lawyer could easily get $2.5 million out of this. No problem. It's insane.
Sounds great to me. That's like $1 million per tooth.
That's right. This reminds me of like some of my libertarian friends who are like, if a cop stops you for riding your bike in the wrong lane, man, fucking resist. Lay on the ground and shout, you don't have a right to do whatever. It's like, fuck no. Comply. If they wrong you, sue their ass later. But in the time where you are interacting with the police officers, they can beat the fuck out of you, shoot you, hurt you, whatever. And additionally, you're wasting everyone else's time. That's the biggest thing to me. Don't waste everyone else's time. Get off the plane, be an adult, call someone, complain, sue, I don't care. Just don't waste my fucking time. Justin?
Well, I mean, just a general rule, if somebody has weapons or more force than you, just do what they say. Like, I understand what you're saying, William, and it's funny in the sense of, hey, I can get lots of money. Do you really want to get your ass beat, though? Like, is it really worth that much? Like, if somebody came up to you and was like, I'll give you $2.5 million to beat you up, would you take that? Would you take that deal?
No.
For me?
No, because I want to get the hell. If I was on a flight, I just want to get out of I just want to be wherever I'm supposed to be, right? Wherever I'm trying to end up being. So if the quickest path for me is to get off the plane and get on a different plane because they bumped me, then that's what I'm going to do. I just want to get the hell out of that rights-free zone, get away from the screaming babies as fast as possible.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, William said we're going to talk about the videos in a minute. I don't really think we need to talk about the videos. If you want to look at them, they're going to be on themidside.com. You can find the page for this episode, and you can watch the videos there. The proof is in the pudding in the videos. When you look at what happens, Daniel, you are 100% correct about how this guy is acting. He is not acting like a human being. He is acting like an animal. And that is the most disturbing part about this story to me.
Yes.
They offer you compensation, right? They offer you $800. And William, I just Googled it, and CNN reports that $1,350 is the maximum. But then, of course, Daily Kos is on there saying that that's not the maximum. That's a lie that people are just using to demonize the government. So who knows what the fuck is true? But that's the number that I found when I Googled it. So they could have offered you $1,350. That's the max. We'll say that. We'll take that as what this. And you don't accept that. And you say, I'm not getting off this flight. And they say, why? And you say, I'm a doctor. I have patients to see. So you're more important because you're a doctor? No, this is just somebody who didn't want to be a human being. He didn't want to say he had a social contract. That's what's disturbing here. America is based on social contract. That when you come to this society, you become part of the culture, become part of the society, and you have an agreement to abide by the law, the rule of law, because that is what keeps this country going, and that is what keeps society from devolving into anarchy and violence. And this man has done that. He has moved away from the social contract, and it devolved into anarchy and violence. And this is the disturbing thing that people are saying when they complain about immigration and when they complain about people coming here. This is something I've said before that I've repeated from Adam Carolla's podcast. The problem is not people coming here. The problem is people coming here and continuing their old habits from the country they left. You leave Mexico and then you set up Little Mexico inside of downtown LA as if that worked when you were in Mexico. It's the same thing here. He comes from another country and doesn't integrate into the American way. Now, we're not saying, and we'll talk about this in a second when we get to the Clemson article, we're not saying there isn't a value at all to other cultures and things coming from them. But this is clearly just ignoring what interacting with people is about and what entering into a contract is about. You entered into a contract with United. You entered into the contract to abide by their rules. You all followed the rules. You had a gamble. You bet that you wouldn't be the one that was kicked off if you didn't accept the $800. Guess what? You were the one that gets kicked off. Get off the fucking plane. That's what it boils down to. And then when they take you off the plane and they bring forth, so not only do you say you're not going to get off the plane, when they get in your face and they put, by the way, do you notice they sent two black cops, by the way? That was
I didn't notice that.
Oh, that's very intentional if you look at the videos. Oh, I looked at it because I was like, if this is white people, we're all fucked. But no, it was two black cops. You notice they've never mentioned the race of the cops once. But they send two cops to you who say, get off the plane, and they grab you. And what do? You squeal like a fucking pig, like you're no longer a human being. And then then after you're taken off the plane, you run back on it and yell, I have to get home. I have to get home. I have to get home.
He also said, just kill me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Why we cannot address, and this is why I'm ranting, why in these stories we cannot address the character and the psychology of these people who are the supposed victims is beyond me. It's this whole victim blaming thing, right? It's right. Just, he brought this on himself.
Yes.
Indeed. You know, there are questions of if United could have just driven the people there, but it's a domino effect, right? If you don't put those four crew members on to get to their flight, well, that flight's delayed, which delays another flight, and the whole fucking United is delayed. And then guess what, people? Social contract. The airlines and flights are interdependent on each other. So then you go, why the fuck is my American Airlines flight delayed? Well, because the fucking United crew couldn't get over because they had to leave David Dow on his flight. So you're going to tell me David Dow is going to fucking destroy all of the schedules for airplanes in the day?
To put a little bow on Justin's glorious rant that's slightly less Trumpy, I will say that...
Wait, did you just compare me to Trump?
A little bit. You snuck into Trump mode there for about 40 seconds. I was a little worried. I didn't know where we were going. Because, yes, I
have
echo
a Pepsi,
the Adam...
David Dow. Have a Pepsi.
I echo the Adam Carolla sentiment, which is to bastardize something he says a lot, basically that there are just not enough laws and not enough police to make everyone behave the way they're supposed to behave, nor would you want to live in a society like that. So we have to take it among ourselves, whether we're from here or from somewhere else. And I think, you know, Justin's opinion is valid. But additionally, there are people within this country who were born here who have no sense of propriety or no sense of humanity. You know, so whether from here or not, we must take it upon ourselves to be human beings, no matter where we come from. We must take it upon ourselves to understand that we live in a culture, in a society, and that we don't want to maximize the misery of everyone around us for the sake of not being an adult, not being a human being.
I mean, yeah, it's our culture that enables the people to come over here and not change.
My point is, it's not just come over here. It's people born here for 40 years.
Well, that's because we're doing it too. And they get here and they say, we're being assholes. So they go, we're going to be assholes. Like, I don't blame them. Like, if I went to another country and everybody was punching each other in the face, I'd be like, oh, I get to punch people here. Like, I get it. We're fucked up too. Like,
that's my point. I just wanted to tone down the Trumpiness of the statement. That's all. But we're about to ratchet it back up as we talk about Clemson University.
I hate everyone. Come on.
All right. Build that wall. All right. Clemson University's diversity training says being late is okay because some cultures believe time is relative. Yes. If you're wondering, in case you're a new listener, why we constantly talk about Clemson University, it's because Justin and I went there for a master's degree and discovered while we were there that it was rotting from the inside, at least in the humanities. And so we want to take every opportunity we can to try to combat it just a little bit. So here
we go. Plus, we do love Clemson.
We do love Clemson, and we don't want it to rot from the inside. It's just, it's difficult. So Clemson University's diversity initiative asked professors to endorse a novel opinion about punctuality, which is that it's wrong, and probably colonialist, to expect people to show up to a meeting on time. The administration in South Carolina has encouraged all faculty and staff to complete an online training course called Diversity Benefits for Higher Education, which is produced by some nonsense company who I won't mention. The training presents faculty members with several hypothetical scenarios. You ready, gentlemen, for this hypothetical scenario? A fictional character named Alejandro schedules a 9 a.m. meeting for visiting professors and students. One assumes these
random
people
name.
Are foreign.
That was from the random name generator.
That's right, random name generator. Some arrive early, others arrive 10 minutes late. What should Alejandro do? Participants are given three options. Option one, politely ask the second group to apologize. Option two, explain that in our country, 9 a.m. means 9 a.m. Or option three, as the meeting organizer, he should recognize cultural differences that may impact the meeting and adjust time accordingly. Of course, the third answer is evidently the correct one, and the module asserts that Alejandro should recognize and acknowledge cultural differences with ease and respect. Time may be considered precise or fluid, depending on the culture. Cultural perspective regarding time is neither more nor less valid than any other. So there we have
it. You know,
it,
I think,
Justin.
You know, as I'm going to jump in here, because I can imagine, from back working at SpaceX that, you know, we have instantaneous launches. And, you know, I can just imagine someone coming in and saying, well, you know, 10 minutes late, you know, that's not going to matter. Time is fluid. Time is relative. And you just wouldn't catch up with the International Space Station if you did that. You would totally miss it.
That's right.
But time is relative.
Time is relative until you blow up a $400 million rocket, however much it costs. I have no
idea.
Well,
and also, isn't the fact that time is relative, wasn't that discovered by a white guy?
Stop appropriating Einstein, damn it.
I'm really torn here because it's racist to view time as relative and to view it as absolute. Isn't both racist?
Paradox, boom.
Time itself is racist.
We're getting there. Justin?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I went to Clemson, so I figured it would have been more important for me to speak first. So, I don't know. But
wow,
I have a Clemson relevant boy.
Here, start
smelling
like a pig. Start smelling like a pig, and then we'll have the cops come in.
You're the one who broke the social contract. That's all I'm saying. So, I have a point that's relevant to Clemson, and it's going to shut the story down. Ready? So my buddy William, who I met at Clemson, he's a big football fan. No, not this William. No, my buddy William, who I met at Clemson, who went to Clemson. William Green did not go to Clemson. He posted on Facebook about this. He's a big football fan. I'm a big football fan. And I think this is the perfect way to say this, because remember, Clemson just won the national title. And he said, so if Clemson showed up in Tampa 2 days late, missing the national championship, .. And that's all you need to say. That's all you need to say. I would have, in that fucking survey, I would have said answer B.
You would have said answer B?
I know, this is the Justin is Trump edition, apparently. I've probably said some variant of that. I wouldn't say in our country, but I would say class starts at 9. And I would say you are marked late now. And if you have a certain amount of lates, I will consider you absent. And if you have a certain amount of absence, you then fail the class.
Yeah.
That's what I would
do. It seems really weird to me because college is about, you know, colleges have their own cultures. And a good college culture is preparing you for the next step in your life, whatever that is, right? Like for most people, you know, I went to Michigan. I was in engineering school. For most people, it's engineering, you know, a workplace, right? And like they inculcated me back when I was an undergrad on Michigan time. They're like, hey, everything will say, like if a class says it goes from 9 to 10 and then your next class says 10 to 11, don't panic. Class actually starts at 9:10. You have 10 minutes, you know, to get into the classroom and then it starts. And everything is that way on campus. It's just the way it was, that everything on campus. In fact, there was I remember there was like some crazy church group that would meet on Sundays, and they put like 9:01 to make it very clear that it actually started at 9 o'clock. But the whole idea was like, there's a culture here that we're fostering, and to know that culture and because the skill is not necessarily showing up on time, although that's a skill that I hope most people learn in their very first job. It was know the culture. That was the skill you were learning, you know, acclimate to a new culture.
The fucking skill is show up early. Vince Lombardi time. If you're not 15 minutes early, you're late. That's what it boils down to. I want everyone out there to just start showing up to everything late every day and see what the fuck happens. See what happens if you show up to everything late every day. Go ahead. Do it.
I don't recommend it to listeners who are considering it. Please do not do that.
No, please do it and please tell me about it.
No, don't. No.
Build that wall. Build that
man.
So I want to make one other point about this diversity training nonsense, which is that this question in particular, and maybe some of the other questions, is in fact racist in itself. And the reason I say that is because when I was at Clemson, Justin, our program had people from all over the world, and I met people from all over the world because I used to hang out all the time in the student union. And like, I would be sitting there reading, and randomly someone from Laos would come up to me and ask if they could practice English with me. And I would say, sure. And we would sit and talk for an hour. And literally, I met hundreds of people. And the number one thing they would ask me about were things like, is this appropriate to say here? Or did I do something inappropriate here? And not to me, but they would ask me about situations from their day. Because they're actually curious about integrating into the culture.
And what, did they climb over the wall or dig under it? Yes.
Indeed. So they would ask me things
perfectly.
Like...
That fits perfectly with my point. You know, like it's about acclimating. It's about learning the skills to acclimate to a new culture.
Yes, 100%. And because they knew, by the way, that the more they did that, the more successful they would be. And the less the less successful they would be. So fucking... nonsense questions like this and diversity training is actually trying to hurt people from other countries because you're assuming that they're incapable of figuring out a new culture and thus you're racist. So congratulations.
Right. This directly applies to what you were saying at the end of the previous story about it's not about being from another country. It's about not being, it's about being an asshole or not. When we do things like this diversity training and we talk about relativism and subjectivism, it enables the assholes from any country, this country or externally, and makes it harder on the good people. And that's the real point, is we're enabling the people who come over here and are assholes and don't change. And these people who go up to random people and say, "Hey, can I practice English on you for an hour?" We're punishing those people because we're enabling David Dow and we're not helping guy who's from Laos.
Wow, you should have a rap career. Yeah. Speaking of enabling assholes, you are almost definitely sharing memes made by Nazis. Yes, this is an article on Vice. Of course, God. It is. I love this story. So the question of the article is it ethical to source dank memes from Nazi memes?
Now, wait a minute. Who sent a computer back to the 1930s and allowed the Nazis to make memes? I want to know who this asshole is.
Actually, if you've seen Captain America Winter Soldier, one Nazi guy got into the computer and has been there underground since World War II, and then Captain America and Bucky Barnes wake him up. So it's that guy's fault.
I know I gotta let you read the story, but I can't even get past the premise in the headline.
I can't.
Who are these Nazis from the past?
Who are these meme Nazis? Okay, so there are so many things I learned from this story, and there are so many things I need to be educated on, because like I tell you all the time with Snapchat, I don't fucking get it. Memes, for the most part, I don't fucking get. And so, Justin, as a meme expert, I'm going to have to let you explain a lot of this stuff, but here we go. Let's begin. Quote, there's a meme about memes that frames the ongoing philosophical discussion I've been having with colleagues and meme economists. Pause. Meme economists? As if regular economists weren't bad enough.
How much Canada do you get per meme? And why am I not getting some of that sweet Canada?
How much meme could a meme chuck chuck if a meme chuck could meme memes? Or something like that.
What the fuck? So, the meme he is referencing is a picture of Sylvester Stallone, who is bloodied and dirty and has a slash B on him. And he's holding a beautiful flower that says meme on it. And handing it to a very happy white girl, and she is labeled internet. Get it, everyone? Okay. So, he continues, the idea that many of the internet's funniest memes come from the less savory parts of the web, in this case 4chan's B-board, which gave us lolcats, rickrolling, and anonymous, but also normalized and perfected harassment, trolling, and other internet-afflicted diseases. Though I've reported on and dabbled with 4chan a bit, I generally spend most of my time not there, blah, 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 blah. He noticed something in his research was that many of the quote-unquote dankest memes are created and shared by a subgroup of Nazis or fascists or whatever the word du jour is on these pro-Trump boards, these very deep subgroups of subgroups of subgroups who you have to, you know, basically pledge your allegiance to God Emperor Trump before you get into them. And so the question that he's presenting is basically, when we share these things and we don't know the source or we don't elucidate the source of them, are we being immoral? And what impact does it broadly have on the culture to share these Nazi memes? Justin, I go to you first. Before you answer the question, you must give me a specific answer for what makes a meme dank.
Wait, are you deferring to me as the meme expert?
Yes.
I hate memes. I hate them. Don't call me the meme expert. Now, before I go into my anti-meme rant, I just want to say that every once in a while, a meme can be funny. So there's one sort of meme that goes around. It's where guys make fun of the fact that if you ever say hi to a girl, she'll be like, oh, I have a boyfriend. Have you seen that meme?
I don't even know what it means to see that meme.
It means, did
you see a
picture?
Is it a specific image?
Right. Well, no, there's variations on the image. Sometimes it's a repeated image with different text. Sometimes, I guess I am the meme expert. I hate myself so much right now. Sometimes it's in the same image with different text. Sometimes it's the same text with a different image.
Okay. I guess the answer is no. It's repeating the same.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's repeating the same joke over and over again, just with different variations. Now, this specific meme I'm referring to is, you know, they'll send a lot of text messages around, or it'll be pictures, and it'll be like a guy saying hi to a girl. Or like one of my favorites is a guy texts a girl and he says hi, and she says, I have a boyfriend. And he replies, I was just going to ask what part of the group assignment you were going to do. Now, somebody did a variation on this. It's a picture of a young kid with an old lady, and the old lady, it says, old lady, excuse me, young man. And he says, me. I have a grandma. Now that's funny because that's clever and it's making fun of that whole meme. But the reason I hate memes is it's just a repetition of the same joke over and over again. And it's just like a way to like, it dulls your senses. It dulls your intelligence and it dulls humor. It makes everything seem obvious. Like I went on this rant on the Patreon only episode about Jimmy Kimmel's joke about Steve Harvey. Everyone's like, oh, is somebody cutting their fingernails? I swear to God, I hear Clifford. No. Does anyone else hear that?
I was hearing a rant about dank memes.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm hearing a rant about memes, too.
Okay. I sounded like somebody was clipping their fingernails. All right. So, yeah. In the Steve Harvey thing, everyone's like, oh, that wasn't a funny joke by
Jimmy Kimmel.
But Jimmy Kimmel, because it was so obvious, because it's the Steve Harvey meme exists. But that's because these people are sitting here all day online making memes and repeating memes over and over again, rather than having an original fucking thought or doing something. It's like everyone's in a giant high school in-joke. Hate memes.
Are memes, you still haven't answered my question, but are memes the new cliche? And if so, I mean, cliches do serve a certain purpose. So do memes serve a similar purpose?
I think.
What do you mean, are they the new cliche? What does that mean?
Well, like, you know, if someone says, you know, that's funny that you asked me to name a cliche and I literally cannot think of a cliche, but there are a billion of them. Basically, there you go, the cliche, there are a billion of them. I don't know how many there are, but that's a cliche to say there are a billion of them, meaning a lot. It serves a purpose in that it's not unique or poetic, but it gets the point across, and it has more universal understanding than more poetic language might.
Okay, I agree with you, except the point isn't the universal understanding. The point is to represent yourself as original and unique, and no one has ever felt this way before or had this thought before. So it's combined with the hipsterism of the internet.
So it's a cliche pretending to be poetic.
Right. Oh, thank you. That's a perfect way to describe memes. A cliche pretended to be poetic. Bam. There we go. That's a meme.
Thank you.
I think there's a more positive way to look at them too. So
no!
I want to. Yeah.
Dissent will not be allowed.
It's kind of a creative process, like honing a joke too. Like there's a lot of parallels on these boards. A less dark web version would be like back in the day, like the cheeseburger, Icon Has Cheeseburger website and all those like families of websites where like, yes, there's a lot of like in joke and everything else, but if you look, they're just iterating over the joke, kind of like maximizing what's the funniest one. And then those funniest ones get picked up by Reddit, and then go on to the rest of the internet, right? So that's sort of where these, you know, there is a process here that is interesting, a creative process that's interesting.
Okay. Is anyone going to answer my question?
What?
Oh, you fucker.
You had a question?
What's the question?
I literally said before you go on to your rant, answer my question, then I gave you my question. The question was, what makes a meme dank?
It's funny.
It depends. No, I was going to say it depends on who you ask. If you ask someone on 4chan, a dank meme is something that is gotten out to the normals. It's dank. It's not good anymore.
Oh, so it's not a good thing.
It's, well, it's, again, that's the hipster thing, right? So once it becomes, so what was it? A cliche masquerading as a what?
A cliche pretending to be poetic.
Right, a cliche pretending to be poetic. So once it becomes cliche and it can no longer pretend to be poetic, that isn't dank to the people who think they're super poetic, as William just said, the people down in the mines. But for everyone else who live a cliche life and think the cliche is poetic, it's still dank. Does that make sense?
No, but it's fine.
No, I think you're asking for objective definition, Daniel, and it depends on which community you're in. They mean different things to different communities. If you ask these like people who are like just found out about 4chan during the Trump election, like this reporter clearly did, then a date meme is a cool meme. But that's not what that community thinks. That's not what they. There's a bit of their own culture and language around things, and that's not what a date meme
is. So I turned to my favorite site, Urban Dictionary, and the number one and number two definition, which were posted less than 1 month apart from each other in 2015, dank meme, top definition, a meme that is just really radical, cool, and neat. Definition number two, which is almost as equally upvoted, is a sarcastic term to refer to an old or overdone meme.
Isn't that what I just said?
Dank meme is dank is the fucking internet version of literally, where it means both literally and figuratively.
Well, it's what William said. It's the community, right? So if you're in the hipsterist community, the hipster-esque community like a 4chan, once it becomes mainstream, it's no longer dank because everyone likes it. But if you're a mainstream thinker and cliche to you is normal and cliche to you is poetic, then it is dank. So it's both definitions of dank at the same time. It's Schrodinger's dank.
This is so
depends on who's observing it.
Dude. Yeah.
Can we just get back to the fact that
I want to make
Nazis
one final point here. The final point here is 4chan is Nazi all of a sudden. Is this just because they
exactly.
go after
That's exactly what I was getting to.
Right. Okay. Is this because they go after Shia LaBeouf's flag that they're Nazis? Like,
yeah, that's a good point. There was nothing in this article to indicate what made them Nazis. I mean,
everywhere in here, he didn't define dank meme and he didn't define Nazi nowhere in this article. And there's a code. So we just like dove way deep on dank meme and talking about how it means different things to different communities. In the media and in the liberal sort of like establishment part of the of culture, Nazi just means someone who disagrees with you. So like that's the only definition I can come up with. So I think they're actually this article is about desensitizing or accidentally desensitizing people because of imagery. And they're doing that with fucking Nazi, right?
Yes.
They are calling everyone a Nazi.
Yes, indeed. That is a fantastic point and one I had not immediately considered because I just assumed that anyone who uses the word Nazi means person who's on the opposite side of whatever I believe. That's like
right.
how
well,
quickly
that's
I've automatized it.
Exactly what it is.
Yes.
Right. It's the same exact way dank's being used.
So Nazis are dank?
Yes. Yes, right? You just perfect.
Oh,
yes.
God. All I want to know is while the Nazis are mining memes, if we could get a little bit of that Nazi gold, too. I'd be okay with that. Anyway. Facebook. Speaking of dank. Facebook this week unveiled its fake news spotter. And basically on articles that people consider or that Facebook considers fake news, there will be a little icon that says this story is fake news or whatever the fuck it says. I haven't seen one yet, but it's out there. And Facebook also unveiled tips to spot. Oh, and by the way, everyone says fake news, but now Facebook is calling it false news because they think we're idiots and it's not the same thing. So here Facebook says, we want to stop the spread of false news on Facebook. Learn more about what we're doing. As we work to limit the spread, here's some tips on what to look out for. It has 10 points, which I'll run through very quickly. Be skeptical of headlines. Okay. Look closely at the URL. Investigate the source. Watch for unusual formatting. Consider the photos. Inspect the dates. Check the evidence. Look at other reports. Is the story a joke? and some stories are intentionally false. My immediate response to this is, ain't no one got time for that. But Justin, what do you think?
I think it begs the question, and it doesn't even get to the point about all this fake news bullshit that needs to be addressed. And it pisses me off because, again, this is something that I dealt with undergrad, and I ranted about undergrad, and that was fucking over 10 years ago at this point. I'm already an old man because, like, we should have dealt with this shit years ago and moved on. There's one basic thing you have to do when you're reading a news story. It'll help you learn if it's fake, and even if it's not fake in the sense that it's made up, you know the spin. And that's what fake news really means, is that people aren't reporting news, they're reporting the spin, right? We saw this with the United article. And the question you have to ask whenever you read anything is, why did they say it in this way? To refer to the Adam Carolla podcast again, or the Adam and Drew show, because Adam mentions it on both, this happened when him and Jimmy left the Man Show. Him and Jimmy left the Man Show. Jimmy went on to do all the awesome things Jimmy Kimmel's doing now, and then Adam Carolla decided not to renew his contract and continue on. But when they reported it, they said that the show performed a Carollaectomy. Now, if you're reading an article and you see the language Carollaectomy, which is one, a made-up word, and two, it's a highly special word. You don't hear that every day. You don't hear about performing an ectomy, right? A tracheotomy or an appendectomy. What was it when you take out the appendix? What's that word?
Appendectomy.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It's an appendectomy. You don't hear that word often. So when you hear that, you said, why would they try and say that? Oh, well, they're trying to make Adam Carolla look bad. And then you figure out, okay, is this fake news? No, it's not fake news. They're not with The Daily Show anymore. They're not with The Man Show anymore. I apologize, The Man Show. They've left it, but they're trying to make it seem like something else happened. So it's not false news, but it is fake news. Or it's not fake news, it is false news. So always ask why.
To add to that, and to use that same story as an example, look for loaded or judgmental phrasing and reporting. So the other phrase they used was Jimmy's ill-fated move to late night. Thank you, Justin.
Yes.
Why, he just started. Why is it an ill-fated move? How are you fucking psychics? Do you know he's going to fail? And also, he became the most successful late night host out there right now.
Right now he hosted the Oscars. So ill-fated.
So look for overly skeptic or overly judgmental language, but I don't. Is this a service people are begging Facebook to provide?
Absolutely not. And I think that this is a symptom of sort of the inside Silicon Valley. What's the word I'm looking for? Sort of the insular, like, judgment of those in flyover country. Mm-hmm. They think that they need to develop a tool to help people not see fake news, when what really needs to be exposed is the fact that all stories have bias, right? All stories do. And you need critical thinking and critical reading skills. That's what people need on the internet, right? We don't need the suppression of speech. We need the increase in thinking. And that's not something you can automate with an AI engine to only give you the things you agree with. That's not how that works.
Right. And as someone who works in digital media, the thing about this that bothers me, other than the fact that I will do my own critical thinking, thank you very much, is the actual mechanism Facebook has built in for this, which is below the 10 tips. It says, if you see a story in newsfeed that you believe is false, you can report it to Facebook. And then it tells you, click the down arrow, click report post, click it's a false news story, and click mark this post as false news. This is only used by people to silence people they don't like. As someone who has run Facebook pages...
Can you imagine... Let's make a made-up scenario. Let's imagine that this was implemented during 9/11, how much of the news would have been suppressed because of certain let's say, sympathetic individuals from the Islamic totalitarian states just decide it's fake news.
Absolutely. I've run multiple Facebook pages where posts have been, before the false news era, you just have the report this post as harassment. I've had multiple Facebook pages with posts shut down by Facebook as harassment and our content deleted and our page shut down for 42 or 48 or 72 hours because it was reported as harassment because the left didn't like it. Not because it was harassment, it was actual content that was being reported, nothing, no language, no harassing people, nothing even remotely offensive other than the fact that the left mobilized to say that it was harassment and got our page shut down. Luckily, when we do that, we have enough of a, you know, a right of center media that brings, you know, sends alarm bells that we can get it back up quickly. But that's all this is going to do. It's going to allow people to mobilize, shut down content they don't like, and disrupt content creation by people who are genuine actors who just have a unpopular opinion. Period. The end.
I mean, that
will
already
not stop false news.
That already happens on an individual level.
Yeah,
go ahead,
that's William. True. I want to find out if there's a way to filter only for fake news.
Just give me all the false.
Because I think you would get
stories.
You would get some really good stories, right? You get all the great Onion stories. You'd get the, you know, left wing, well, probably not so much because it's Facebook. Some of the right wing wacko stories about, you know, I don't know, pizza parlors and stuff like that. It would
the
be great.
Pope
it would be
endorsing
very
Trump.
That would be a very that would be very entertaining. Basically, they're finding the most entertaining feed on Facebook.
That's right.
That's true. But no, on an individual level, you already get post-blocked if people don't like what you post and report you. Then Facebook post-block you and you can't post for a certain amount of time. So they're already doing it.
Oh, I know they're already doing it. This is just another tool. And in fact, when these new tools are rolled out, that's when they're most popular. And that's when all the highest level of censorship happens. And it's, I mean, not censorship. I need to be really precise with my language. The highest number of shutting down voices you disagree with.
It's social censorship, right? There are different forms of censorship. I would argue this is social censorship.
I like to reserve the concept of censorship for something the government does, just to be clear about my own stance on it. But the point is, we know what we're talking about. It's going to be fucking abused left and right, but mostly left. See what I did there?
I think Justin, we should provide a midsider tips for spotting fake news, and I think we could do a much better job, the three of us.
I already did.
Coming up with ways
just fucking
to
ask why. That's it. Ask why. That's it.
We could be a fun blog post. Actually, we'll think about putting that out.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll put it on my list. You just made the list. All right, do we want to talk about some other stuff? Some of it's fun, some of it makes Justin very angry.
No, but I guess we should anyway.
Yeah, we should probably move on with this show.
Well, it is your show, even though I keep interrupting you.
Yeah, you do. Right, like right now, trying to transition. It's time for The Hopeful Romantic with JML. Focused on two quick reviews and then we're gonna hit up four movie trailers, and we've got some good ones this week in the movie trailers. But two quick reviews. First, I want to review a book. It's called The Truth, an uncomfortable book about relationships, and it's by Neil Strauss. This book basically serves as a sequel to Neil Strauss's book The Game, which came out in 2007, and The Game was about him becoming a pickup artist and becoming part of that community. And then this book, released in 2015, is a book about, after having gone through the pickup community, he met the woman, quote-unquote, of his dreams, his quote-unquote soulmate. I'm saying this because those are very sort of controversial terms, but I don't want to go into that. And then he ended up cheating on her. So the book follows his true story of when he then went into sex addiction rehab. And when he went into sex addiction rehab, there was a social justice therapist who told him that anytime he sexualized a woman in his head, he was committing sexual violence.
Holy
so
crap.
He then, I know it's a lot of this book is terrifying, but then the thing that's really good about Strauss and I don't know how these books haven't been made movies yet, he always comes out with a healthy viewpoint on the other side. So if you want to see, and now I've skipped forward to the review because of what Daniel said, but if you want to see somebody deal with sort of the dark underbelly of our culture and the things that are wrong with it, but then come out of it more rational and having learned from it, I think reading Neil Strauss is a great way of doing that, because his prose isn't great. It's not beautiful prose. It's not poetic, right? He doesn't use great symbolism. He doesn't use great imagery, but he essentializes things very well. And it's very romantic in that way, that it stands for different archetypes. And he uses his own journey as a way of representing the broader cultural journey. And here the broader cultural journey is the trauma that's repeated from the parents' relationship into the children's relationship when the children don't introspect and analyze and figure out how they're repeating what their parents did. And it's really interesting to watch him go through this. The one thing that's a little rough is in the middle of the book, he spends a lot of time talking about his exploration into polyamory and all these different multitudes of non-monogamous relationships. And that can just, he writes a lot about sex. So it's just sort of like, okay, great. But when you get through that and you understand he's trying to show his journey and you get to the end and the ultimate point it makes, it does have a happy ending, which will spoil it if you have a brain. But at the same time, it's how he gets there that makes it worthwhile. So I would highly recommend this book to anyone who's curious about relationships, who's curious about trauma, who's curious about parent-child relationships and the way that that is influenced. And just, you know, if you enjoy a lot of what we talk about here, I think you would enjoy that book.
What's the name of the book again?
It's called The Truth, An Uncomfortable Book About Relationships. And if you really want the full story, you can either read you can even read The Game first. The Game's a good book as well. The second thing I want to talk about is Newfound Glory just released a new song, Party on Apocalypse. And I had both of you guys listen to this song, William and Daniel, and I know, William, you're a big Newfound Glory fan too. And I even sent it immediately to Midsider Alfred to see if I was going crazy. Because to me, this song is Going Galt, the pop punk version, isn't it?
Has a lot of the same themes, certainly. Basically withdrawing until, you know, the world collapses and then rebuilding it in a better way.
Right, so. And why is it saying that you should withdraw? Because of how irrational the world has become.
An orgy of self-sacrifice.
Basically, except they concretize it in hedonism and narcissism and secondhandedness, which we know is an orgy of self-sacrifice.
Yeah. Overall, I was really impressed. I don't like all of Newfound Glory, but I was really impressed with this song. The problem is I couldn't watch the video because the singers are so incongruous with their voices that it threw me off.
What does that mean?
Like,
yeah,
I just, when I hear the voices, I have such a radically different picture of the performers. I'm not saying it's rational. I'm saying I personally couldn't make it through the video, even though it's a very good song.
How do you picture them?
I don't know. Just not the way they are.
No, it's interesting, Daniel, because like I've grown up with them, sort of. Mm-hmm. You know, like I've seen them being younger and older. So like I'm curious because I can't hear their voice and not see them.
Right, yeah. I'm the same way.
So this is the first time I've ever seen the performers ever, I think. And I just picture them a lot younger, I guess. A lot younger.
And well, again, that's very Randian. It's the idea of preserving the youth in the good way, right? Keeping the good youthful spirit. Not the immaturity, but that love for life.
I had something similar recently as a quick tangent with, I've been listening to a lot of Hardcore History by Dan Carlin. And when I finally saw Dan Carlin, I was like, I can never look at him again because that is not how I picture him. And I don't want to picture him that way.
I'm curious. I'm going to look up a picture of him. But I was going to ask you, Justin.
Do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, I was going to ask you.
Oh, you're going to ask me? Okay.
Compare this to, remember we had a long conversation about a song from their last album, Selfless. Yeah. And how basically the entire song was not selfless. Like the theme of the song was sort of selfishness as like you or I would kind of like define it. And you know, I can't not hear, like, for me, the song was so good and I could just like skip over that part, right? The even though it was in the chorus, the word was in the chorus, but it how does that, do you think this song is better put together than Selfless, like thematically?
Yeah, I think it's much better put together. I think there's a clearer sense of the philosophy. If you want to get deep into what I think's going on with the band, I think when the original lyricist left, Steve, because of his, you know, charges, I don't want to talk about those, but I think when Chad took over, more of his individualistic straight edge philosophy has become part of the band as than it ever has before. I think it's been in here, but I think it's become a lot more explicit, and I think he's become better at expressing it. But I also think the song Selfless shows a misunderstanding in our society of the difference between being selfish and selfless. After I showed Midsider Alfred the video, I sent him the lyrics for Selfless. And he said, well, they're actually critiquing selflessness. They're not critiquing selfishness. And that's the problem. And that's why I use the word narcissistic all the time. When people mean selfish in our society, they really mean narcissistic. And that's what that song was really critiquing. And I think you've said that to me before, that it's a lot harder to rhyme narcissistic or narcissism than it is selfless and selfish. So that's what people really mean. And that's what they mean. And if you look at the song Selfless with this song, it's very clear what they're talking about when they say, you know, I want to be selfless. They mean that they want to fight for their values and make their values the number one thing. Not that they merely mean they want to give up their self.
Cool. Well, and the only other thing I would say is I will be attending many a Newfound Glory concert next weekend. So I can't wait to see this one live.
I am as well. We're going to be there three nights in a row. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be awesome. And I am very
excited.
After
three nights, they'll be old Found Glory.
I'm sure somewhere during night two, I will no longer have a voice. So we'll have to see if Justin can actually podcast on Sunday.
Well, that's after the second night, so we'll see. But it's actually funny you say that, Daniel, because it's a three-night celebration of 20 years as a band. So it's really funny that you say that. But as a final note, before we move on to Trailer Takedown here, I am very impressed with the first two singles from their album. Their album is Makes Me Sick. The first two singles are Party on Apocalypse, and I can't remember the other one. Fuck.
Is it called I Can't Remember the Other One?
No, or... I can't remember what it's called.
What a great title. It's
that would be a very pop-punky title.
Yeah. So. I'm blanking on it, but I actually think, and I'm going to make a bold claim here, I think this album could be their best album ever.
What? I don't know.
Okay, moving on.
Trailer Takedown. First trailer.
The Mist is Spike TV's reboot as a TV series of the Stephen King novella. I think it's a novella. I don't think it's a full novel. Which was a movie, if you remember. I forget when it came out, but it was starring Thomas Jane as the lead. 2007. Okay, it felt like the 90s to me. It was so long ago. But the movie came out in 2007. Basically, what happens is in a small town in Maine... because everything happens in Maine in the Stephen King verse, a mist rolls in and it causes things to happen in the town. Now, in the original movie, there are bugs from another world, aliens from another world that attack people. But this mist seemed to be more of a psychological issue than it did seem to be an otherworldly issue.
Yeah.
Do you want me to go first? You guys have stuff to say.
This looked better than the movie, but I had a weird thought when watching this, which had nothing to do with The Mist itself, which is simply, by the time we're old, let's say we make it to 80, how many versions of any given thing will there be? Like, when we're 80 and we say, have you seen The Mist? We'll be referring to a TV show, a movie, a book, even though scene doesn't apply, a game, you know, and how many more TV shows and movies will be made out of The Mist by the time we're that old? I think the over-under is six.
The game is not based on the same thing, Mist.
There is another game. It's not the MYST. There is actually...
Oh.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yes.
I apologize.
Thank you. I think the over-under is six of any given thing written early in our childhood.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's an interesting point.
I think I'm not going to take that bet. I think it could be higher though.
Yeah. Anyway,
this is like the long term Rotten Tomatoes game.
It looks fine. Nothing was so compelling in the trailer that it's a must watch for me. I guess if I hear from a lot of great people that it's going to be that it is awesome, I'll give it a shot. But
oh man. So you're hugging this?
No, I'm tackling until someone says there's something good about it.
Tackle. Okay. Well, I'm going to convince you right now to tackle it forever.
Okay.
You did not pick up the social justice leftist undertones in this?
Well, of course
I did. I saw
two
boys kissing and then punching each other.
Where the guy kisses the one guy and then he beats him up for it? Like, and then there was the whole reference to, like, Mother Nature or whatever and how, like, we're being mean to Mother Nature, so this is our punishment.
Thank you. Like, you reminded me of another thought I had. But yeah, I did pick that all up, but it's so ubiquitous now and everything that I don't... It's just, like, that's what art is now. So,
never give up. Never surrender.
Never surrender. Thank you. The other thought I had, of course, Justin, was that this is a better version of The Happening. So,
take
you know my
back.
Feelings about The Happening. No, I will never take it back. The Happening is the worst movie ever produced.
No, it's not.
It's worse than The Room.
It's bad, but it's not the worst movie
it's
ever made.
It's the worst.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is. Forever
Hyperbole.
And always. Amen.
Hyperbole. Hyperbole. William?
I'm tackling. I just didn't see anything interesting. It just seemed all tired and just formulaic.
Tackle. Second trailer.
Detroit is the next movie from Hollywood's big shot female director, Kathryn Bigelow, wife of James
Ace?
Cameron.
Oh.
Ace?
Bigelow, male gigolo.
Oh. No. Wife of James Cameron. She did Zero Dark Thirty and The Hurt Locker. So she has gotten a lot of hype for those. And she has again picked a topic and a subject that will get her a lot of Oscar buzz. I'm sure that's very intentional on her part. This is supposedly based on a true story. If someone could tell me what the true story is and when it took place, that would be great.
Yes,
it's starring the black guy from Star Wars, who I'm referring as the black guy from Star Wars, humorously.
And
it's about black people fighting the cops, and some of the cops are black, and some of the white people who aren't cops are evil. And, you know, I'm going to pivot very quickly here into asking a question to you guys. We just saw Get Out, which is like basically saying, if you don't get out, white people are going to kill you. So kill all of them and get out. Is this movie going to further incite racial violence? Like, I'm genuinely concerned when I watch this trailer. It seems like they're trying to incite a race war with things like this.
Yeah, there was a tweet I saw recently that was something like, you know, the left's solution to solving racism is to never stop talking about race, to bring it up in every instance, make every single movie about it, and then call you a racist if you don't want to talk about it. This is sort of the continuation of that, and it's really a pity, actually. It's really a pity because there are so many great stories like this that are genuinely interesting that are going to necessarily be politicized and are going to turn people off ahead of time. And I think are going to make the story worse because of what the director feels like she has to do with it. So it's worse on all ends. So I don't know if I'm necessarily afraid for my life any more than I am living in the capital of the United States during the Trump administration, but it is sad to me that this is where we are.
I mean, I'm not afraid for my life. It's just a question I was asking, but I mean, it's a definite tackle.
Tackle. Yeah, mine's a tentative tackle.
Tackle.
By the way, this is based on the 1967 Detroit riot, which began in July of 67 when police raided an unlicensed after-hours bar known as the Blind Pig. It turned into a huge riot, and Governor George Romney ordered the Michigan National Guard into Detroit, and President Johnson sent in the 82nd and 101st Airborne Divisions. 43 dead, 1,200 injured, and 7,200 arrests, with more than 2,000 buildings destroyed. Biggest riot in the United States other than the 1863 New York City draft riots during the Civil War and the Los Angeles riot. So the third largest riot in American history.
Can we just make a movie about when Chicago burnt down?
Mrs. O'Leary's cow.
I'd watch that universe. William?
I'm tackling it as well. Tackle. I think the only thing that would interest me in the slightest bit is to see what they do to make Detroit look like Detroit. And I'm wondering if they just use like current on-location shots, because it basically looks like a war zone currently anyway. I think they probably did. Yeah.
It's really cheap to shoot in Detroit.
The only good thing right now going on in Detroit is they've got a new hockey arena. Joe Louis, they finally retired it. And that's way more important to me and like interesting to me than this movie.
Yeah, they could have actually burned 2,000 buildings in Detroit for realistic set and no one would have noticed.
That is very true. It is a weird, weird place. If you've never visited, don't go. But if you want to see what it's like, there's lots of YouTube videos on Detroit. But if you really want to see things, if you follow any of the like abandoned buildings, like sort of YouTubers, they it's just a gold mine in Detroit. There's so many interesting things that have just been left to rot because of the way Detroit's been run.
But if you want to buy a house for a pack of cigarettes, no better place.
Just don't buy the cigarettes in California.
Third trailer.
Thor Ragnarok is the third Thor movie to be released. I don't know why we needed a third Thor movie, but we're going to get one. This trailer follows his journey as he is kidnapped and forced to fight in an arena and forced to fight the Hulk. There are many, many, many things I could say about this trailer. I may not say much because I'll let you guys go, but I will just say that this trailer makes me very, very, very angry. I hate this trailer. I think it's awful. Tackle.
Tackle.
Daniel?
Tackle. Tackle. I tackle just for the fact that the entire trailer led up to a really shitty joke. That was the entire point of the trailer, all this despair, destruction, whatever, led you up to a point where Thor is meeting his opponent in the arena, and he says, he's giddy about his opponent when he comes out, and he says, it's a friend from work. What a fucking stupid joke. Stupid joke. And certainly not worth listening to the horrible music and experiencing the terribly cut trailer. So,
William?
Yeah, I agree with you guys. It's a tackle.
Tackle.
People are actually excited about this movie. That's what the thing that I don't understand. Like, I don't get it. Like, there's a lot of potential in the Thor, like, sort of universe. And I don't know if the comic, Thor as a comic relief, which has been sort of his only role, is, like, even interesting at this point. Like, it's becoming a caricature of a caricature. It's crazy.
Okay, I'm going to do this then, because I thought you guys would make other points, but you're not. First of all, this looks fucking shitty. It looks cheap. Okay, Cate Blanchett looks awful. The shots of Loki, he looked really bad. It's just like, my basic thing is, how can you watch a Justice League trailer and then watch this and think this is good? I mean, let's make another comparison. The use of modern music. Which is it done better in, this or in the Justice League trailer?
It's not even close. The use of music in this trailer is offensive.
That's how
it's
I feel
so
about the entire
poorly
trailer.
Disintegrated with the art. If they just basically put the song on and let it play.
Yes.
Like it's the most naturalistic possible version of using pop music you could do in this trailer.
Yep. And then you get all the way to the end and it's like the serious thing and it all of a sudden switches to a comedic tone. And then all the stuff they're ripping off on it, right? I mean, they're ripping off like, didn't you see a Star Wars ripoff in here with the way a lot of the aesthetic they were going for was?
I saw lots of that and lots of Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
Like, it feels like they're trying to get the feel of Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yes, and that's what it ultimately becomes at the end. They try to turn it into Guardians of the Galaxy at the end, down to the awful fucking logo they came up with.
Yeah. Oh, well, you know, Stranger Things was such a big hit, so let's bring back the rest of the 80s.
God, the logo, like, makes my eyes bleed.
Yeah. This is overall dumb. If you want to watch something good with Tom Hiddleston, by the way, Faiza and I just watched the whole series The Night Manager. Pretty great.
Yeah.
So. Also, I would like to note that I have saved all of my hugging for the next trailer.
Yeah.
Final trailer.
Star Wars The Last Jedi. We finally got a teaser for it. And I will say this, because I'm going to leave a lot of this for Daniel, because I'm sure he has a lot to say about it. And his number one thing is the best thing about this trailer or this teaser, so I'm not even going to talk about it. I'm just going to let him talk about it. But I will say this. Maybe it's because they have so much social cred that they don't have to show a story, but I'm just thankful that someone released a teaser that's actually a fucking teaser. Thank you.
It's a lot of pressure. You do this thing all the time, Justin, where you're like, Daniel will tell you about the number one thing that I think he's going to say. It's like, I can't read your mind. I have no idea.
Well, you already said it previously, so I'm assuming you're just going to say it again.
I'm probably not.
I just want to know how many tears Daniel shed while watching the teaser trailer.
Yeah. So many. Buckets. It's incredibly moving. Justin, just tell me what you think I'm going to say.
You're going to talk about the music. The music is clearly the best part of the trailer.
I'm going to talk about the music, but that wasn't the thing I was going to lead off with or anything.
But you're going to say it's the best thing.
Talk about an incredibly nerdy point that only the 1% of the 1% of Star Wars fans are going to pick up.
Do it.
So, anyway.
Oh, man.
This teaser is amazing in so many ways. Not the least of which is that we get to hear Luke speak, which is awesome. Remember that we haven't heard Luke Skywalker speak since for fucking ever ago. It does wonderful visual stylings. It takes the Star Wars story and it continues to move it into a new, creative, interesting direction, which is what some people criticized the last film for not doing, even though I think they executed what they needed to do perfectly. And the trailer is incredibly emotional for Star Wars fans, I think, especially hardcore ones, because of the ending of the teaser. I keep saying trailer, I mean teaser. And that's because Luke Skywalker says that the Jedi must end. And then it cuts to super dramatic music with Star Wars The Last Jedi. And at that point, I'm bawling my eyes out and thanking God for John Williams, who is the master of all things in the universe musical.
What's the 1% nerdy thing?
Yeah, getting to that. So when it opens up, it's like, you know, just breathe. What do you see? And she says good or light, dark, and then balance. When the thing she's looking at, when it says balance, is one of the symbols that is used. Oh my God. I think it's in the Knights of the Old Republic video game for a sect of Jedi called the Grey Jedi. And the Grey Jedi are in between the Sith and the Jedi. They're people who believe that you can't have balance in the Force unless you accept the dark side and the light side together.
Wait a second. If they do this, I actually like Star Wars.
Yep.
So I think what
fan theories are going. Yeah.
Right. So I think what Luke is going to do is establish a new order of the Grey Jedi, because all the Jedi do and the Sith do is bring chaos. So to have actual balance, which is what they've been talking about the whole fucking series, they need people who can use both the light and the dark.
Wait, so he's going from Luke the White to Luke the Gray?
Yes! Thank you for making that joke. I really appreciate it.
There's definitely a possibility here that they could go very Aristotelian with their philosophy, right? That,
yes.
Not that there's a balance between good and evil, but that there's a balance between passion and reason and, peace being, you know, a balance between the two, not a, an elimination of evil.
Right. It's not saying, I mean, they've classified it as the dark side, but it's saying, you know, that's not necessarily dark. It's just part of our nature and you can't shut it out. Just like you can't shut out the light side, quote unquote. You need to realize they're both parts of our nature and accept what they are and how to deal with them in a healthy manner.
Yeah.
I love it. Can they do this, please?
Well,
I will be a, no, if they do this, I'll be a Star Wars fan. I will.
Oh, man. Mark I'll this day in history. Fan of you yet.
Yes. So I'm mega excited about this. Obviously, that is pure speculation, and they own the rights to all these things, and they can do whatever they want with the symbology and whatever. But based on the trailer, based on the symbology, you know, it just seems so much a perfect fit, and I cannot wait to see how they execute it. I give this trailer all the hugs.
Hug!
All the
hugs. Hug!
Yes.
Ray and the black guy are gonna have a kid who's gonna be gray because white and black is gray.
That's racist.
That's funny. That's funny, right there.
But no, I mean, I think logically the story becomes that whatever Luke says, Ray sets up the new order, which is a better order, sort of like generations improving on the previous generation type deal.
Yeah. Well, every time the Jedi, you know, thriving, they get wiped out, and there brings mass chaos, and right. Then they have to wipe out the Sith, and that brings mass chaos, and so it makes sense that this is how they're going to bring balance to the Force.
I mean, wouldn't this necessitate that in the third story, Kylo Ren is redeemed?
I think so. Which is an interesting plot line. You know, Anakin.
Yeah, they have a lot of work to do,
but he had to die to do it. So, yeah.
Yeah, they have. I think that would be interesting if that's the way they go. That's pure speculation on my part, but of course I'm hugging this as well, just to get that out of the way.
Hug.
But if they can do something comparable to the Prince Zuko story from Avatar: The Last Airbender Kylo, then this could be something amazing. And I know that's again a complete speculation on my part, but the seeds are definitely there in place. Both. Even from Rogue One, there's seeds planted about the Grey Jedi that people have been talking about even before this preview. So there's definitely seeds there that could grow into something interesting if they want to go in that direction. So everyone who criticized the first one for, you know, being a saga when Star Wars is a saga and having echoes and all that other stuff, there's a reason why you have to start a story like this that way. And there's an identity to sagas and how you do things. And that's what makes them effective. So this is a chance for a payoff. So and from the preview, it looks like it's going in that direction.
But even if, you know, disregarding the saga thing, it's important to note that narratively, if the whole point of the last two parts of the story, especially the third act, is to undermine the status quo, you really have to establish the status quo in the first act. So if that's really where they're going, that points to the intentionality of all those echoes even more as more than just a saga thing. It's the overall story they're telling.
That's a very good, beautiful way of looking at it, Justin, which is that, yes, if you were supposed to think like, oh, this is just going to be the same thing over again, and they have to break that pattern, which is what looks like Luke is going to be doing, you have to have the pattern to break in the first place.
Right.
Yeah, that's a glorious way of looking at it. And it makes lines in the first one like, this is just another Death Star, look even more brilliant, even if and they looked kind of silly. Unbelievably
I hope they do this. And on this hype, I mean, I was going to see it anyway because I enjoyed the first one. But on this hype and all in this possible direction, I am definitely hugging now.
Hug!
All right, we're almost done with this episode. Let's finish this all up with Reddit on Reddit.
These things are all on Reddit. Mostly pics of felines, comma,
first Reddit. Uber/Lyft should have a quote quiet ride close quote setting to indicate passengers prefer to ride quietly and not engage in small talk with the driver.
They do have a setting like that. It's called your fucking mouth.
How about
we continue a theme from earlier, reoccurring theme here in this midside saga of be a human being. If you don't want to talk to your driver, politely tell them, you know, nothing against you whatsoever. I'd like to sit here quietly, please. You're definitely getting a good rating or whatever it is, but you don't even have to be that diplomatic about it. Just be polite, explain it, whatever, be a human being. The end. Quiet ride setting achieved.
Isn't that ironic, though, that you're asking someone who doesn't want to talk to someone to talk to someone?
But yeah. All this is doing is encouraging more social disconnection, which I don't like. Obviously, I don't want a law against this kind of thing, but I would just would argue strongly that having this kind of thing just continues to push us apart when actually one of the things that is so interesting about Uber and Lyft is that these are real human beings driving their own car in many cases, and they're fun to talk to. They're interesting to talk to. You can try out weird topics of conversation. Even if you're someone who is socially awkward, you never have to see this human being again. You're with them for 11 minutes and it's over. Who cares?
Yeah. I had a guy pick me up once who was talking about how he felt a disconnect from everyone in the world and how like everyone was so irrational. And I was like, have you heard of this book called Atlas Shrugged?
Have you heard the good word of Ayn?
You know, it's funny that this is a thread because back when Lyft first came to San Diego, I drove around a little bit for it because I was really curious about, you know, the sharing economy and stuff like that. And also I was new to the area. It was a great way to learn San Diego. And one of the things that Lyft differentiated themselves from Uber on was customer service. And the whole idea was that in a Lyft car, the passenger sits up front and you talk to them. But if they sit in the back, they probably don't want to be talked to. So other than a hello, just, you know, if they start a conversation, they start, but don't, you know, don't start a conversation with people who prefer to sit in the back. That was sort of like the social norm that was drilled into you during like training for Lyft drivers. Like if you want to talk, if you want to be social and be friendly, the passenger will sit up front. And if they don't want to be social and friendly, they'll sit in the back.
Interesting. I've never sat in the front in an Uber or Lyft unless there were three people in the car.
Oh, I always sit in the front. Maybe I'm a presumptuous douchebag. I don't want to sit in the back.
Yeah, I like to sit up in the front unless I really don't want to talk to someone. And then it's usually because I'm on the phone and I have my earphones in.
And, you know, I've never sat in the front. I always sit in the back, but I also always talk to my driver. So I'm a conundrum both ways.
But to your point, Daniel, the fact that this would even come up as a thread or a thought in someone's head shows how dehumanized things have become. They're not seeing the driver as another person to have an interaction with and existing as there. They're seeing them almost as a robot. I call you, you bring me to where I want to go. And you act the way I want you to act.
Yeah. I understand when there are times when someone doesn't want to be talked to. I have those times. I put in my earbuds, I put my head down, and I walk on. And if someone tries to start a conversation with me, I'll point to my earbuds or whatever it is. But if I don't want to talk to someone, I'll tell them because I'm a fucking human being and I want to treat them like they're a human being.
So yeah. Daniel, I'm curious, when you ride the metro, do you talk to people on the metro too?
If there's some reason to do so, yes, I'd be happy. Like if I've talked to tourists before because they're the most interesting people. People who live in DC are mostly scumbag douchebags. So I don't talk to them.
Yeah.
But for people from out of town who are like, you know, looking around and being like, oh, you know, I wonder why there's, you know, no stop at this place. I can chime in and tell them what the safe track work is happening. And then that leads to a discussion of why the metro is so shitty. So
I first moved to Baltimore, the biggest thing for me was to realize that people don't talk to each other in the grocery line. They stab each other in the grocery line. It's very different than in the Midwest.
It's more like Morse code, but with knives, right?
It was really weird. But on a more serious note, like it makes jarring.
First, it makes what Ray Rice did seem normal.
it was really jarring for me because that's like, you know, I had some people in Baltimore when I explained this to me say, yeah, that makes sense because they would hear, like, see on sitcoms or hear stories about people meeting each other in the grocery line and going on a date. And they're like, that would never happen in Baltimore. And yeah, it really wouldn't never happen in Baltimore. Like, people don't talk to each other in public, like in the grocery store, like at all.
Growing up in the Midwest would be weird if you didn't talk to each other in the grocery store line. Be like, well, what the fuck do you have against me? And then, so like.
Yeah, I felt super awkward not talking to people.
Quick aside there, like Faiza, having grown up in DC and then we moved to LA together and spent a few years there and then we moved to Texas, like literally day one in Texas, standing at a stoplight and someone starts talking to me and Faiza and she's like, what do you want? I don't have money. And the guy's like, just talking about the weather, ma'am. No offense. It's like she couldn't even contextualize that other human beings would talk to you and not want something.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, that's
yes,
that's true.
Next Reddit, which is also the last Reddit. Serious. What do you do when you find out all your friends are toxic? Serious replies only.
Like they have like radon in their lungs? Or what?
It's a metaphor. It's a metaphor.
Serious only, William. Serious. Hey, I mean, super serious.
If they are seriously toxic, then you probably should contain them in some fashion. Whatever the appropriate MDRS instructions say.
Get that so lead
William's
jacket.
This question is murder them.
Get that lead jacket answer. From the dentist's office and just throw it over them. Oh my god. Okay, lots of things I don't understand about this. First of all, what do they mean? Justin, what does toxic mean?
It refers to people who are only a negative in your life and not a positive. So it's like...
Okay, good. It's not toxic masculinity. I was worried that it was going to be that.
Well, that would be a form of the use of the word toxic. They've appropriated it to call all masculinity toxic. But it's the idea of the way they act and the way they are is damaging to your life rather than healthy to your life. Toxic people are basically people who are self-destructive, ultimately.
I think this is super common when folks go to college, like earlier in your college years, is to figure out that you have – there's two things you figure out, especially if you move away to college, is that you get to choose your friends. Like, I grew up in a small town, so you kind of have to be friends with the people who are around you. Like, there's not many things to choose from, right? So you have to choose your friends. But then the other thing is you have to keep your friends. And what I mean by that is you can't just count on, like, seeing them every day at school as being a way to keep your friends. So I think if you really find people in your life that are toxic, then you just start backing off your engagement with them and things will just follow naturally at that point.
I echo a lot of that sentiment. I'll add that, you know, specifically defining for yourself what makes them toxic is a good way not to engage with other people who have the same type of toxicity. The one nuance point I'll add here is that to take this question literally, when you find out all your friends are toxic, it's possible that's true, and even if it is true, you should still evaluate yourself. If you discover that all people around you are toxic, either there's something about you that picks toxic people, and you should try to fix that, or two, you might have a bad definition of toxic. That's a possibility in this scenario.
I love how you said both the benevolent and the malevolent interpretation.
Spectrum. I'm on the spectrum.
On one side, that there's something wrong with you. This is the benevolent side, that you pick toxic people, so you need to fix yourself. On the other side, you are the toxic person by calling everyone toxic.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, if you decide like, oh, all these people are toxic and it's because they're Republicans and you're a Democrat, it's like, your definition's probably bad. You should reevaluate yourself. Or all Democrats and you're Republican. I don't mean to make this partisan at all. Just, you know, introspect in both situations and try to figure out what you can fix about yourself in this scenario.
Right. And I think if you combine your point and William's point, you have a fuller picture of what's going on here. And, you know, the further you get away from where you grew up, and I mean that emotionally and I mean that distance-wise too, it's very important to not stay where you grew up and to travel outside of that and live outside of that. I'm not saying you can't go back to it, and I'm not saying you don't want to stay there forever later on, but you need a broader perspective. And that's what you're saying, Daniel, is open up to that broader perspective and learn what your values are and what is toxic and what isn't, and then you can reflect on where you came from. Because very often, we talked about with the book The Truth by Neil Strauss, you're repeating things without realizing you're repeating things. And that's more than likely what this person who wrote this question is saying. They've realized all these negative things that have always been in their life. What do they do to get rid of it?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Let's end this episode. What did we learn this trip? Daniel?
Well, I kind of learned what dank memes are. Still wildly confusing, but I'm getting one step closer to being internet relevant.
William?
I learned that I can spot fake news by the indicator on the bottom of a Facebook post.
Easily done. Justin, what did you learn?
Mischief managed.
Go ahead, William. What were you saying?
Oh, I said mischief managed.
And I learned that there's a such thing as gray Jedi. And they better fucking do it in the movie now. I'm going to be so disappointed and hate Star Wars even more. So this could go either way now. Here's the thing. You guys are all excited. You're like, wow, Justin might like Star Wars. Yeah, but I was coming to a place where I was accepting Star Wars for what it was. Now, if they don't do this thing I want, I'm going to be just angrier. So this could backfire greatly.
And none of us will like him when he's angry.
You call it backfire. I call it either way. I'm entertained.
Well, that's true.
Either way, witness the farce. If you love witnessing the farce along with us, and we appreciate you coming along on this journey, why don't you tell a friend about the Midside? Telling a friend is the number one way that your friends find out about the Midside. Just stating a bit of a tautology there, but it's one that bears repeating over and over again. We sincerely appreciate all the telling of friends out there, and we have grown the audience pretty significantly in the past year because of all of the telling. In this case, telling is a good thing. And remember when we were children and be like, don't tell, don't tell. This case, tell. Tell a lot. Tell everyone. Boss, sister, cousin-in-law. Is that a thing? Tell everyone you know. Tell a stranger. Tell the guy in the metro. Tell your Lyft driver. There we go. Action of the week. Tell your Lyft driver about Welcome to the Midside. And when he goes, no speak English, just keep telling him. He'll get it. So other than that, you can find The Midside at themidside.com/podcast. Listen to a comprehensive archive there. Or you can subscribe on iTunes and Google Play. Leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. Lots of 5-star reviews. We still have a perfect rating. That's right. This show, believe it or not, perfect rating on iTunes. And, of course, Liberty.me syndicates us through their channel. We are greatly appreciative of our libertarian friends. We sort of poke fun at you sometimes. But, you know, well, we agree on most things, so it's okay. And then, of course, there is patreon.com/themidside. Patreon is a platform that allows you to support us financially by giving us a little bit of money every time we produce a show. No show, no money for us. Show, money for us. And it's a brilliant way to help us pay for the hosting and advertising and keeping the lights on and Justin's prostitute habit. Basically, it covers all the bases. Yeah, I love it. Social media, everywhere at the Midside, and especially the Snapchats. Justin's favorite thing in the world, sending me a Snapchat that I don't understand. That's almost all
Snapchats. I'm still waiting for my dick pic.
Because I don't turn the volume on, and apparently you need the volume to hear what's being said, but fuck that. So, thanks so much, everyone. Tell a friend. We'll see you next time.
This concludes your journey into the Midside. I'm Justin M. Wisniewski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a day.